You're listening to KRUU LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa and beyond. Grassroots, community-supported, solar-powered radio broadcasting live on this beautiful end of March day from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa. This is Writers' Voices. I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and with me is my guest co-host and filmosopher, Bruce Miller. Welcome back to Writers' Voices.
And thank you for bringing in Robert's novel from last week. I'm very excited for Shane to be able to read that.
Oh, yeah. And I think you'll like it, too.
Cool.
Yeah. He's referring to Road to Reckoning, which was our author last week, Robert Lautner. Now, there's two little things I want to bring up from that. He didn't realize that you had to leave before the interview was over, and he wanted to tell you something right at the end of the show. I don't know if you got to hear this or not.
I heard him say my name, but I missed what he said.
They've sold the film rights already.
Oh, my gosh.
So we're looking forward to the movie version of Road to Reckoning.
That's very exciting. Yeah. Thank you for telling me. That's great.
And the other thing is that we discussed during the show that he's using that Robert Lautner is a pseudonym.
I did catch that part.
And he said it's not a secret what his real name is, but he didn't go ahead and tell it. And I've tried Googling it, and I have not been able to find it. And I asked his publicist, and she wouldn't tell me either. So
he didn't want to then.
The hint is that he has authored 4 historical adventure novels that have a lot of violence in them. So and he lives in Wales. So if anybody knows who that is, drop me a comment on the KRUUFM.com website. You can go to the blog post about the show in the comments and give me a hint, or email me at show@writersvoices.com.
And again, the title is
Road to Reckoning by Robert Lautner. And today we have a very special guest whom Bruce has been talking about to me for quite a while, and we're really excited to finally have her on Writers' Voices. Do you want to do the introductions?
Sure. Her name is Julia Desmond, and she spent her childhood in Midwestern United States. She grew up in the countryside of Wisconsin. I love Wisconsin, Julia, but that's where we honeymooned. But she found she loved to travel the world when she was 18, spent 6 months in Africa teaching English in a remote village of Kenya. And while her affinity for numbers led her to a career in investment banking, she still continued to learn about other people and cultures by traveling overseas particularly to India and throughout Asia. And one of the things about Julia and you, Monica, is that you're both business-based spiritual people. And she ended up leaving the investment business in her 30s and immersed herself in spiritual traditions from all over the world and found Diksha, D-E-E-K-S-H-A. We'll have her talk about what that is. Originating from India as a very accelerated path for awakening. Julia Desmond is currently a oneness trainer in Colorado and lives with her husband in the Aspen area. Julia, welcome to Writers' Voices.
Thank you so much, Bruce and Monica, and thank you so much for having me on your show today. It's really wonderful to join all of you.
And you're calling us from Colorado today?
I am. I'm at home in the Rocky Mountains today, and it was actually snowing this morning.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, we had snow this week, too. We thought we were done, and then, what do you know, there it is. Well, Julia, tell us how you came to writing from the One.
Well, that's an excellent question, Monica. And coming from a business background, I never had any intention to ever write a book or to ever have my name on the cover of a book. And so, as Bruce had mentioned, I became a part of the Oneness Phenomenon about 8 years ago, which led me to the Oneness University in southern India. And I have traveled many times there and became a Diksha giver, a oneness trainer, and now a oneness meditator. And throughout my travels, I've shifted into awakening and moved into a great bond with my divine presence. And my divine showed up in my life very powerfully about 3 years ago due to one of these oneness processes from India. And the divine literally woke up in my heart, literally descended into my heart over a weekend process. And my divine started speaking to me very, very powerfully about the universal spiritual laws, about awakening, the importance of God realization, the importance of having a very powerful bond with the divine. And so this happened very quickly, where my divine was speaking to me pretty much all day long, giving me realization, and actually instructed me to take out a notebook and start writing down the realizations. And I'm glad that I did, because my notebook started to get filled up very, very quickly with these divine insights and revelations. And this happened exactly 3 years ago. And pretty much within a couple months of this happening and me writing a lot during the day, my divine said I was going to publish a book with these insights about the divine in this book to the public. And I was actually quite shocked, because I lead a pretty private life, and to have my name, you know, attached to a book was kind of scary to me. But my divine actually walked me through it, and about a year later, I ended up publishing my first book, known as Writings from the One, 108 Insights from the Divine. And I'm about ready to publish my second book this coming year. And so the writings keep happening, and my divine instructs me to bring these writings out to the public. It is for public use and for knowledge at this great time of the great shift of awakening on the planet right now. And it's for everybody. It's for everybody from all faiths, all traditions, any type of path a person is from. These words of the divine is simply an energetic tool of grace to help us all shift into higher states of consciousness. And no matter where we are on our path, these words of grace will simply help us and move us forward. And so by simply reading these words of grace, or when I read them out loud in presentations such as this, a person is receiving a diksha through the words of grace, and will help activate a person into higher states of consciousness.
And the great thing, Julian, it's very important for me as somebody who's been involved with transcendental meditation for over 40 years, is, as it says in your introduction, Julia is a world citizen, open to all paths, all beliefs, all faiths, all teachings. Diksha is not, you know, you get turned on to something that you love, you feel it's working, it's wonderful. I first got turned on to it late 2007. I was up in John and Coralie Day's office at Everybody's, and I'm looking for things for my wife. She's sick. And she's telling me about these experiences she's had with Diksha. And it's amazing, and it's been amazing. And you want to turn people onto it. But a lot of people, as one person, you know, people here that have been involved with TM for so many years, they think we're talking about perhaps another guru changing, as one person say, why change horses in midstream? And so as I emailed you, Julie, it's very important to me that we let folks know this does not involve any belief, any change of beliefs. The founders, Amma Bhagavan, are not gurus. They are avatars. They're not looking for you to follow them. They say develop the bond with your own personal divine, which is what you're talking about. And Monica, this is one reason I wanted Caroline on this show, because about 3 weeks ago, you had a person wrote a book about people experiencing angels.
Right.
This is their divine coming into their life, and your mom is very connected. Do you want to tell that story about the Walmart? Your mother's wonderfully connected, and I look forward to her reading this book. It's amazing.
Yeah.
This is a phenomenon that's happening all across the board, and Caroline, your mother, is really wonderful that way. She's so inspiring.
She is very connected, and her mother, too, my grandmother, was very connected. In fact, she lived in the town of Newton, Iowa, and was part of a prayer circle where people from all over town would call her all the time to pray for them. You know, it was... You know, they really believed, she really believed in the power of prayer and her connection with the divine. And
the Walmart story, would that take long?
Well, the Walmart story was, she was in Walmart. My mother was in Walmart in Mount Pleasant, and she saw this little girl, and she just got someone telling her, you need to go talk to that little girl. And she went up to her and said, you know, where's your mother? And the little girl didn't know where her mother was. And my mother knew someone who worked there at Walmart, and so she was able to take her to her and reconnect, you know, that the girl had lost her mother. And so, but she tells it a lot better than I do.
Well, it's her story. And Julia, we could describe this as that still small voice from within, would you say it's not so small anymore?
Absolutely. The voice gets stronger and stronger and more clear if that's the type of bond that we would like. And the bond is here to be delivered to all of mankind. And Bruce, this is a wonderful point that you're bringing up. This isn't an either-or situation. It's wonderful that the Diksha is simply an energetic tool of grace and will simply accelerate any person on whichever path they're already on, whether they're Christians or Buddhists or Muslims or Hindus, whether they're from the TM movement or the Self-Realization Fellowship movement. It's simply an energetic tool that helps a person along. And absolutely, Sri Amar and Sri Bhagwan from southern India are simply avatars bringing these tools of grace.
Now, could you define avatar? Because for a lot of people, all they know about avatar is the movie.
Exactly. Avatars are great beings that take a physical incarnation when they're born to bring a specialty into mankind and to help mankind move into higher states of consciousness. So Sri Aman Sri Bhagwan's specialty is enlightenment, is bringing higher consciousness into the planet through awakening and enlightenment. You can have avatars of music, avatars of science, avatars of love, avatars of healing. So a person could probably Google avatar and see the various avatars that have lived within the planet throughout the thousands of years.
Yes, Einstein was an avatar of science, they say.
Exactly. He's an avatar. Gandhi was an avatar of peace. So there have been many avatars that have walked the planet and really helped mankind jump up in shifts of consciousness, whether it's science or love or awakening or any field that is jumping up in consciousness at that time.
So I'm curious as to who makes the judgment that someone's an avatar. For example, the Catholic Church has a very long and very defined set of rules for who is considered a saint. You know, who is called a saint? Is there some body that determines who is considered an avatar?
You know, I actually don't know the answer to that question because avatars span all traditions and religions, so I don't actually know the answer to that question.
Okay. And you know, Julia and Monica, a lot of what we're talking about is often somatics. You know, as I read this book, being in TM for 40 plus years, so much was familiar, so much I heard from Maharishi. It's almost like a reminder is what it is.
And the book we're talking about is Writings from the One, 108 Insights from the Divine by Julia Desmond, who is our guest today.
And Julia, you want to talk about what Diksha is?
Sure. Diksha is a Sanskrit word, and it actually means benediction, which means the transfer of divine grace. In the Western cultures, Diksha is also known as the oneness blessing. So perhaps in your community, you may have also referred to it as the oneness blessing. I'm drawn to the Sanskrit word, so I use the word Diksha when speaking about this benediction. So Diksha is an ancient energetic tool of divine grace. It's actually been on the planet for thousands and thousands of years to help people move into higher states of consciousness. In the olden days, times past, a spiritual teacher would give Diksha to their students. However, the student would need to prepare for many years, actually, before they could receive their first Diksha or their first transfer of divine grace. It took a lot of time and preparation back in the olden times before a person could receive their first Diksha. Now, Diksha has resurfaced at this great time of enlightenment, which was marked in 2012, this great age of enlightenment. Diksha has resurfaced throughout the past couple of decades and has been brought back into mainstream consciousness right now and is now readily available. That's how accelerated the times are. That we can receive Diksha any day that we would like from people all around the world. Pretty much in every street corner, there are Diksha givers. Millions across the planet are able to transfer this divine grace. And it's a direct link up with divine consciousness. And so I use divine a lot because that's how it's been revealed to me. But this divine is You can use any terminology that you feel comfortable with, whether it's oneness or love or this energetic light that lives inside of us. So it's important to have our own bond with this divine. And so when I speak about divine consciousness, I'm talking about the all that is, or the one being that pervades all. And so there are different ways to transfer this Diksha. The most common way is hands-on, where a Diksha giver will place their hands gently on top of a person's head for maybe 30 to 60 seconds. And this divine consciousness is actually transferred into the individual. And it comes through the top of the head, through the crown chakra. And the Diksha actually moves up and down the spine through the various chakras, activating the various chakras, and actually activates various parts of the brain to help move a person into higher states of consciousness. This divine grace also deactivates certain parts of the brain, which cause that sense of separation. So the parietal lobe in the brain is actually deactivated when one receives Diksha. This parietal lobe, when it's overactive in mankind, it creates the mind chatter, it creates that sense of separation, it can create that loneliness, that isolation, that depression. And so when that's calmed down a lot, and then when the frontal lobe is actually activated by the Diksha, the frontal lobe is the seat of enlightenment, of awakening, of joy, of underlying bliss. So when this is activated at the same time, a person is really able to move into awakened states and ultimately receive the shift of awakening. And so the other ways to receive Diksha is through intention. So through time and space, you can receive a Diksha. And then also through the eyes. A few people here and there have been initiated to give the eye Diksha. That's another way to receive the Diksha. Another fantastic benefit of receiving this divine consciousness is that it activates the area of the brain which helps us create this bond with our divine. It's simply a part of the brain, I don't know the name, but when this brain is highly activated, then we can hear the voice of our God internally. We can actually walk and talk with our divine on a daily basis when certain parts of our brain are activated. And so this Diksha is bringing us so many different things. It's bringing us a shift of awakening as well as this bond of the divine being activated within us. So it's really a twofold path or activation that's happening when we receive a Diksha.
Now, Julia, another term that I've heard over the years, it seems similar. Can you tell me what the distinction is between Diksha and Darshan?
Good question.
That is a great question. And Darshan is another Sanskrit word. And I believe the meaning of that is sitting with a teacher and hearing the teachings of the great master. So when someone is in Darshan with someone, they would actually be sitting in the presence of this individual, and they could just receive the higher consciousness by sitting in the presence of this person, or when the person is teaching or speaking, receiving that presence of higher consciousness.
And Julia, that also explains a lot of things, like the importance of becoming awakened and what the awakened person does. You mentioned one awakened person affects 100,000 people.
Absolutely. These shifts of consciousness are very important because it brings the empowerment to one person, meaning one person does make a difference. When we look in this outer world, you know, it can be overwhelming. Well, how am I going to make a difference? Actually, one person can make a tremendous difference when that shift of awakening happens in their brain. It's because their whole level of resonance, their vibration, moves up. And when a person is walking around, you know, within their communities after the shift of awakening has happened, they actually activate other people around them to also experience higher consciousness and helping others move into higher states of consciousness and awakening. And then if they're able to give Diksha on top of that, receiving Diksha from an awakened one will bring the shift of awakening to that person. It's just a matter of time. And so that's what I really love about these tools and processes is that they're very empowering. And I, obviously coming from an investment banking background, I have a very type A personality. So I like to be around things that work, that are powerful, that are efficient, fast, accelerated. And I think that's why I've been so drawn to Diksha, is because it is extremely powerful and extremely empowering for one individual to move into their own higher states of consciousness, but then to actively help others around them by giving the Diksha to help them awaken as well. The transformations are palpable. When a person is awakened in their family, and then their spouse is awakened, and then their mother is awakened, and then their father becomes awakened, the whole family shifts. The whole family lineage shifts. And then you take that one step further. If a company owner is awakened and then starts to operate their company from the higher states of consciousness, then they start to shift their partners. They shift their clients. They shift their employees. They shift their whole marketplace. So that's what I mean when I say that one person really does make a difference. It's extremely empowering to be on this awakening journey, and then to gift this awakening to others through the Diksha, whether it's just intentional or just in your presence, being in your presence. So I can speak about my husband a little bit. He's in the investment banking business as well, and he's awakened, and just his presence is helping shift his whole entire company. He doesn't even need to talk about Diksha or oneness or this or that. Just his presence when he's in meetings and on conference calls and on business trips and at these big conferences around the country, he's actually bringing this higher consciousness into this whole field, his whole field of investment banking. So it's a very real thing that's happening, and it's happening very quickly. And the transformations are pretty cool to see how quickly that they're happening for all of us.
You're listening to Writers' Voices. I'm Monica Hadley. My guest host today is Bruce Miller, and our guest is Julia Desmond, author of Writings from the One, 108 Insights from the Divine.
First of all, this book, as I said, is a reminder for me, who's been in the TM movement for so many years, and I recommend it to everyone. You will have heard much, if not most, of this before. Perhaps the Diksha energy is something that is new, and being inspired to encourage those that are involved in TM, I am inspired to say this isn't necessarily because of the founders, Amma Bhagavan, bringing this out. It is a reflection of the age of enlightenment, the golden age, that allows this to come out. Catherine Sherwinka came a few weeks ago, Julia, and did a process, and she said, I can feel it's because of all the work that you all have done in the TM movements for all these years that allows this to happen. And Maharishi talks about breaking up the rocks of ignorance. And so it's a reflection of the times that where Diksha used to be, where you had one-on-one with a master over many years, to now you can go online. You can go on the internet, which is really Indra's net, and get Diksha energy.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what's so important to remember, is that every single one of us have played a role all these years of bringing this great age of enlightenment, whatever our path is. And so it's not just one or the other. We're all extremely important. And the previous 40, 50 years of what everybody has been doing has prepared this planet to really move into the golden age right now. It's so exciting, and it needs to be honored.
Now, Julia, in the book, and also a little bit ago, you mentioned 2012 as sort of the turning point. What was it that, you know, who defined that or determined that that was the turning point, and how can we tell?
Sure. I can only speak from our tradition. In the ancient Vedic texts, they talk about a 26,000-year cycle of the planets and the cosmos and the planetary alignment. And so they speak about the yugas, which are the ages. And the 26,000-year cycle started and ended in 2012, in December 21st, 2012. And a lot of other spiritual traditions have talked about this, other religions and things of that nature. But I can only speak about within our tradition, is that that really was a very important day within the planetary alignment, where the divine became extremely, accessible to mankind, and literally thousands of people on that date around the world became awakened because that shift of consciousness was so available and ripe at that exact time. You know, people around the planet became awakened, and because of that very important day, since that point in time, awakening has become much easier for other people to find and to have their own shift. And so within our tradition, we entered into the Golden Age, and it's the Golden Age Yuga, and will last for another 1,000 years. And it's really an upswing in mankind's evolution is what we're talking about. We've left the age of separation and have moved into the age of oneness, where we can become one with others, but more importantly, become one with our own divine presence. This is actually the natural state of mankind. This is our given birthright. And due to what we all decided to come and experience as mankind, we came and chose to experience separation, severe separation. We all know what that feels like because we all were born and at this time to come experience that. But now our generation and everybody alive, you know, during these decades, we now have the opportunity to shift into oneness and to experience the divine so powerfully in our life, and ultimately to become one with our own divine. So that's really how accelerated our times are right now.
And Monica, you know, that's very familiar to those that have been in the movement. Kali Yuga, Sat Yuga, probably the most well-known was that the Mayan calendar ended December 12, 2012. Mainstream the world thought, oh, they're talking about the end of the world. No, they talked about an end of an era. And so, you know, many traditions talked about that. And this book, I talk about it, so it's like a reminder. You use the word the field a lot, the field. It's known here as the unified field, but you also use the word the unified field later on in your book. And you talk about ways to activate the field in your life, which is one of the ways is praise. Talk about that. And what was really interesting, Julie, you say praise is important because praise is the language of the field, which just makes sense. I love that.
Exactly, and thank you so much for bringing up this point. This was gifted to me because it became my experience. 3 years ago when the shift happened, I was able to see this field of grace. I saw it all around me. I have mystical eye, mystical vision. So when the divine descended into me, when I literally looked around, I saw everything as this divine field of grace. And then I was experiencing the divine presence coming through me as me and connecting out to this whole divine field. It was an interaction play of energy. And so this is the experience that I was having, and then my divine was bringing me these realizations at the same time. So it was a fantastic experience. And the key thing that my divine wants me to speak about is praise, because it is the language of this field. And it's wonderful because we can just test it up into our own life. We've all heard about gratitude. Gratitude is something different. It's actually the next step. Praise is simply the words of thank you. We can say it internally, we can say it externally. And we're giving these words of thanks to our divine for absolutely everything that's happening. And so once we start to do this, we can do it as a spiritual sadhana or spiritual practice. It really activates the field of grace to then respond back to us. Ultimately, down the road, this will be a natural happening where all we want to do is praise our divine because we've realized this divine presence. And it's a natural byproduct of realizing our divine. It's speaking this praise because that's all that you want to do. But up until that point, we simply can utilize it as a sadhana, a spiritual practice. And if you're ever having a bad day or wake up with negative thoughts or being in a low state of consciousness, all you have to do is sit down for 5, 10, 15 minutes, and you could take out a notebook and you just write down the words of thank you for all the things your divine has given you, whether it's that day or the previous week. You'll see how you shift actually into a nice state of consciousness. And if you keep doing this on a regular basis, your divine starts to respond to you very quickly. It's a central teaching of the Oneness University that God is dependent on the devotee. It just simply means that this divine field of grace is dependent on us. It's an interdependent relationship between us and the divine field. And so one of our responsibilities is to recognize this field of grace for everything that it's brought us, even the challenging situations. So things that we would consider negative, they're just simply bumps in the road. So if we can get to the point where we're sitting down every day or throughout the day in our car and expressing these words of thank you for everything, even if we had a difficult situation at work, if we can literally give these words of thank you, then we will have the realization of what this difficult situation actually gifted us. So it is a sadhana. It's very simple. It's very easy. And I highly recommend people just start to try it out and see how their bond will dramatically grow with their own divine. Miracles will happen very quickly right now if a person starts doing this.
Well, Julia, you talk about grace a lot, both in our conversation and in your book. And grace has always been one of my favorite words, favorite concepts. And I've grown up, you know, I was raised Catholic, and grace is an important aspect of the Catholic tradition as well. And I've always felt that it's connected with what we talked about a few weeks ago on the show that Bruce was referring to, with just guardian angels, that a guardian angel, whether it's a specific presence or whether it really is just another word for a state of grace. I've always walked through the world feeling like I have been protected, and whether by grace or guardian angel, I don't really give it a name, but I've always felt that protection.
That's wonderful. It sounds like you already have a beautiful bond with your divine, and that's so wonderful to hear. I, too, come from a Catholic upbringing, and I think that that's why I'm drawn to using the word grace. I never used the word grace so much until Deeksha came into my life, and it's so funny. I make the joke that I grew up Catholic, but I found God when I went to India, to Southern India, to the Oneness University, and it's interesting that my journey took me there to be linked up to this divine consciousness, where I was then able to realize grace and realize Christ consciousness and be able to utilize this divine consciousness now to help others awaken and help them have their own experience of the divine, whether it's Christ consciousness mm-hmm. or Buddha consciousness. However it shows up for them in their individual path, it is chosen by the divine. And so there's so many different words that we can use, and that's why it's important to realize our own journey and what works with us as far as the wording and things like that.
Well, one more comment about grace. I became a great aunt today, or this week, a few days ago, and my great niece's name is Elizabeth Grace.
Oh, well, congratulations. That's a beautiful name, especially right now.
Absolutely.
There is no such thing as chaos, is there, Julia? Everything is just connected. It's amazing. That's one of the things that you talk about. You know, we can put our attention on what's on the outside world, or we can put our attention on the God bond. Maharishi talked about it in this term. He'd say, capture the fort and enjoy all the gold mines. And that's the thing. You develop that God bond. Everything is taken care of. Monica talks about how she realizes she's taken care of. There's a new a need to do this in this portal that you speak about between 2012 and 2014. There's energy coming in now where it's imperative to put our attention, if we've had it maybe many years ago, on transcending, on the transcendence. Do it now while the energies are so available for this rapid awakening. The quickening, you write.
Exactly. Absolutely. And that's what's so exciting, is that we can be aware of this acceleration and help others at the same time.
You're listening to Writer's Voices, and we're speaking today with Julia Desmond, the author of Writings from the One, 108 Insights from the Divine. Julia, is there a particular significance to your choice to include 108 insights?
Yes, I was actually guided to use 108 because it's a very powerful number within various spiritual traditions, but also within you know, the Vedic tradition, 108 has always, it like it unlocks the mysteries of life when we use certain numbers. And so 108 was the appropriate number to use for this book. So I know other traditions, it's important in their traditions as well.
That's a great question, Monica. My email is actually blended108@gmail.com. And I remember when I was at MIU, Maharishi International University, which is now Maharishi University of Management, and I first heard that back in the late 70s. And what I first heard is there are 108 ways to transcend. So there, it is a very divine number, and I wasn't surprised when I saw the title of the book, Writings from the One, 108 Insights from the Divine. One of the great things about this book, Julia, is that you will receive Diksha energy upon reading the words. You want to talk about that?
Absolutely. A person can pick up this book, and actually just by touching the book, we'll receive the Diksha energy, the oneness consciousness comes through. But then when a person flips open the pages and starts to read the words, because these are the divine's words, the person will be activated into remembrances of what is being spoken about. The DNA is actually being reshifted when we're speaking, when we're receiving this divine consciousness. And so even if a person may not understand the particular sentence that might be written about or spoken about, the divine energy is still coming through. And so when people who are very sensitive to energy, when they can feel it, they'll be able to feel the divine grace coming through, even today when I actually do the reading over the radio show. And at home, people, when they pick up the book, they tell me they'll read it at night and get a very powerful deep shot right before they go to bed. And it's wonderful because it's just another form of empowerment. It's really a handbook of grace that people can just take wherever, whenever, and receive the grace whenever they would like it.
Well, Julia, why don't we do the reading now before we run out of time?
Okay, fantastic. So, like I said, this could be a form of meditation, and so as long as we know that this is the divine speaking, we'll be very receptive to what is being spoken about. And so I will actually, the number that I picked out is the nature of the divine presence. It's writing number 89. And so I'll read it slowly so that it can be taken in, but also so that the divine can come in and bring remembrance in us. So again, the title is The Nature of the Divine Presence, Remembrances Located in Our DNA. The Divine Presence is a field, an interactive field, a tangible and accessible field of grace, an infinitely abundant field, a field dependent on us. These are remembrances located in our DNA, being activated now through these words of grace, during this current shift of the ages. It is up to mankind to activate this field from our end. It is our responsibility, and this must be remembered. We, as empowered individuals, must step up to the plate. We must take action and activate this field. This actually equals the universal spiritual law of action. So how does one do this? Number one, first and foremost, one must recognize this field. One must acknowledge this field. And one must praise this field of grace. Praise is a very simple yet powerful action of giving thanks and acknowledging everything the field gives us on a minute-by-minute basis. Praise is speaking the words thank you, both internally or externally. The field outside plus the field inside of us is the same field of grace. So it is the sense of I that literally blocks this recognition. Once the shift of awakening and God realization happens, the I dissolves, and all that is left is this recognition of pure presence, being this divine vehicle of grace. This physical body is the God link between heaven and earth. Sheer presence stares out of the eyes and is the driver of this life. Number two, the second way to activate this field of grace is to consciously ask to be this God link, to be this divine vehicle of grace. This action equals man reaching out to God. It is time now for humans all around the planet to be this link, to connect heaven and earth through the physical body with God consciousness. This is the missing link right now, and this is known as the God link. Fortunately for all of us right now, we do have processes, oneness processes, to help us get directly linked and bonded with our presence. For those who have passion and are willing to take action and put in external effort, grace will deliver, for this is the nature of the universe. Number three, the third way to activate this field of divine presence is to create and cultivate a relationship with this field. This is absolutely necessary. Give it a name, give it a form, give it a personality, give it a role. For example, is your divine your best friend? Is your divine a divine mother? Is your divine a divine father? Spend time throughout the day actively cultivating this relationship, for it is very alive and must be treated as such. Put in maximum effort. The rewards are infinite. In closing, this is our role on the planet now, to consciously and actively reach out to the divine presence, utilizing all the gifts of the spiritual laws of the universe. Putting in maximum effort equals maximum response from the divine. Grace will deliver.
That was Julia Desmond reading from Writings from the One, 108 Insights from the Divine.
The couple of things, I actually made a note earlier, remembrances are located in our DNA. We actually remember this, and that just makes perfect sense. I also like the baseball reference, being a St. Louis Cardinal fan. We got to step up to the plate, man. But one thing, I'm sorry, Julie, a couple of things I wanted to talk about. My personal divine, and you might want to talk about why it's important that we give it a name, give it a form. It was explained to me because we're talking about the undescribable. We're trying to describe the indescribable, talking about source energy. We give it a name so we can make a bridge ourselves, the God bond. We can have a bridge. For me, it's the Divine Mother. I've always felt that for a long time, and it was very encouraging to me. Do you know Ron Hall locally? Ron Hall does the Metatron website. He told me, in his opinion, that the Age of Enlightenment is the complete regeneration of the sacred feminine. That's what it is. And then I read near the end of your book, Julie, you say, the suppressed goddess energy is emerging through humans and various institutions across the planet. Suppressed goddess energy, you need to write a little bit later, it is being birthed. The heaven on earth is being birthed right now through the goddess energies, the divine feminine, as higher states of consciousness. I'm going, yeah, baby, I like my personal divine. But I think that's really great. I mean, I have a feeling about the feminine aspect, and I really believe that this is essentially the feminine regeneration movement.
Well, that's interesting because one of my business partners and I came to the conclusion recently that we are in the early years of the century of the woman. That the 21st century is the rise of the woman to position of power.
You and Julia are great examples of that. What do you think, Julia?
I absolutely agree, and our teachers say the same thing, that women are bringing enlightenment to the planet right now, and very soon, women will take the roles in politics and running companies, a much greater role, and the divine feminine needs to come back to the planet for healing within families, within the destruction that's going on with the environment. So the divine feminine is absolutely essential right now and is arising, and it's just such a beautiful energy to be tapped into.
Well, three of the most powerful people on the planet today are women. Janet Yellen, the Federal Reserve Chair, Angela Merkel, the German Chancellor, I believe, and I believe it's the IMF, the leader of the IMF, Christine Lagarde, I believe is her name. I may have some of that wrong, but I know that they are three of the most powerful people in the world today, and they are women.
Julia, let's talk about, Bhagavan says, life is relationship. I didn't exactly understand that, but I do more now. It's starting with our relationship with our highest inner self. Talk about life is relationships and how our friends, our relationship with our friends and families are our greatest gurus.
Absolutely. Life is relationship is actually one of the greatest teachings from the Oneness University. It is touching on that we are all connected within oneness consciousness. So I know in my own past, sometimes it's easier not to put yourself out there, to be a recluse or this or that. That's not what life is about. Life is actually being in relation with everything around us, with our relationships, with our family, with the environment, this interconnectedness at a cellular level. And so we can literally look at the relationships that we have right now, and if they're good relationships, you know, if they're happy, they're fulfilling, if we're getting along, that means we're actually coming from a very nice inner state, because the outer world is simply reflecting what is going on in the inner world. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we mean when we say these relationships are our greatest guru, especially if we're married or are in partnership and are living with someone. They are simply reflecting back to us everything that we need to see. And it's funny, I reread that writing today that our partner is our greatest guru, because it's a reminder for me, especially, and for everybody, what is going on in our life right now? Are we having issues with our partner, whether it's a business partner or a romantic partner? We can literally utilize our relationships to see what we need to set right within ourselves. We never want to point the finger or blame the other. That's not what is empowering or what our path is about. Our path is simply seeing what is reflected all around us, because it means that's what's going on in our internal world. And so we are in connection with our relationships, especially with our families. We are karmically tied with our parents, with the families that we were raised in, and things of that nature. So it's essential to always bring relationships back into our life and to set right our relationships. Mm-hmm. If we're a person that needs to set right relationships, please do. Look at your primary relationships, whether it's with your parents or your spouse or your business partners. If there's conflict, it simply means something needs to be set right, and we can't blame the other. Pointing the finger doesn't work in this age of enlightenment. We can only point the finger at ourselves.
It's so interesting.
What do I need to see? What do I need to really realize about myself and my nature right now that is being reflected in this conflict?
Of course, the old saying is, if you point at someone, you've got one finger pointed at them and three pointed back at you.
Exactly, and that's a beautiful reminder, because it's true.
Yep.
So much of what is reality is almost the exact opposite of what we think on a surface level, including when we see something in somebody else and we think it's their problem, and it's actually what is going on inside of us. We can use that as a tool. It reminds me of another phrase, Julia, see and be free. And I hear that over and over and over again. I read it in your book, especially when we're not awakened. All we can do is see our conditioning. Talk about see and be free.
Exactly. The awakening journey is not about becoming. It's actually about seeing. So when we move into higher states of consciousness, the whole act of just seeing ultimately brings liberation. It brings this internal shift of liberation. And so it is the greatest act to simply see, and when we get there and we're not attached to it, then we're just in witness consciousness. We're just literally observing everything going around us, and this is the freedom that is being talked about. This is liberation. This is mukti. And it brings the empowerment back to us, because it doesn't matter what's going around us. You know, if there's chaos or there's conflict or this or that, as long as we can see and we're not being affected by it, or charges or things of that nature are coming up, this is the liberation. This is being in response mode. It takes a person out of reactive mode, and then they operate in response mode. What we need are more people operating in response mode, because when they're aligned with their divine higher purpose, then we're responding from the divine will. Before awakening, we are aligned with the ego or the self's will. But once the shift of awakening happens and a person can journey on that path with the divine, then the divine takes over and takes over your life, and then you really start to walk within divine will. And so just starting the sadhana of seeing, and then it ultimately will help bring that shift automatically. So.
And that's also related to seeing what's happening and staying with it, allowing it to happen, staying with the fear, stay with it. It's just that the energy of attention can burn that off. I first heard that, and I didn't understand it when I was at MIU in the late 70s, Monica, and Maharishi said, you've got to, if you have a headache, put your attention on it. That didn't make sense to me at all, but it does now. You put your attention on anything, any ache, fear, something that's wrong, you see it, stay with it, and that power of attention. Michael Milner, Julia, talks about the heat of attention will burn it away.
Absolutely. This is what's known as staying with the what is. The nature of the self is to be in resistance. So anything that comes up, we want to resist it. It's just the natural state of the mind. So our teaching is stay with it, accept it, move through it, and then it burns off. And again, we do have to put in that effort at the beginning, but then ultimately through our own awakening and transformation, this becomes automatic.
Now, before we run out of time, we want to let listeners know locally, John and Coralie Day are big time involved in this. You can learn about that. You walk in everybody's, go upstairs to John's office, turn right, knock on the door, say, John, I've heard about this oneness. What is this all about? But they want folks to know that they have Sunday night Diksha events. So every Sunday night, 7:15, and you can email them to find out. You email cjdey98@gmail.com, and you can find out where it is on Sunday evening. And we also want to talk about, and by the way, John said you're very mystical, Julia.
I am, and I know John. I am very mystical. I have the mystical eye opened up. So, yes.
That is so cool. And we want to talk about how people can get your book.
Sure, it's real easy. You can just go on my website, which is juliadesmond.com, and it has all information about me and also how to order my book, Writings from the One.
And the book is published by Balboa Press, which was founded, it's a division of Hay House, which was founded by Louise Hay, best-selling author. Can you tell us a little bit about working with Balboa Press? Is it a sort of hybrid of self-publishing?
It is. Balboa Press is self-publishing, and they were wonderful. Because, again, I am type A, I was able to get it done very quickly. My divine instructed me to get these writings out pretty much ASAP. And so I chose the self-publishing route because it saved a lot of time and was drawn to Balboa Press because it was a division of Hay House. And it was up to me, how fast I got it published. So it was great. I highly recommend it to anybody looking to publish something quickly.
Right. Working with a traditional publisher, first you have to find somebody willing to take it, which can take a long time, sometimes years. But even once you have a publisher, the window is 9 months plus to, you know, from when the book is finished to when it's on the shelves. So you can certainly cut a lot of time out of that. And that's considered fast. 9 months would be fast in mainstream publishing. So you can cut a lot of time out for self-publishing.
So juliadesmond.com?
Yes.
Julia?
Yes. Yes, that's my website, juliadesmond.com.
And also, John and Coralie said you can go to oneness.usa.org, oneness.usa.org, to learn more about this. In fact, there's a you just click on what is this phenomenon to learn more.
Now, Julia, you said you're writing or you're working on your second book. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. I actually wrote a different manuscript and was about to get that published back in 2012. But at the last minute, I ended up publishing this book, Writings from the One, 108 Insights from the Divine, So I'm about ready to publish that first manuscript. The first manuscript is actually the whole backstory of how these writings came to be. And I wasn't ready to put that out there yet because it's just very personal in nature. But people have asked me, well, what is the backstory? We want to hear about you. How did you get involved? Why did this voice start talking to you? And things like that. And so it will be the full manuscript with these 108 writings interspersed in the first manuscript. So the two are related. But it's important to me to get that original manuscript out there. And actually, I'm now looking at a traditional publisher because people have contacted me. So that's the process I'm going through right now. Whether I do go through Balboa Press or going through a traditional publisher, I'll make that decision very quickly.
That's one of the another nice thing about self-publishing is it can lead to more attention from make it easier to get a traditional publisher once you've got a book out there that is selling and they see that you have a platform. So that's very important.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I actually had no idea how important it was to have a published book. Like I said, being from the business world or a numbers person, this is the last thing I ever thought I was doing, but being led down this path, I realized how important it is because it brings credibility to the work that I'm doing. And it's just a helpful tool that people can access worldwide. I have people who are buying this book, you know, in China and in Europe, and they're asking me for translations. And it's quite shocking to me. It's amazing that people actually want this book translated into their own language. So that's pretty exciting.
And Julia, before we run out of time, I just want to say thank you, Monica Hadley. Your show ostensibly is about writers' voices. It's really about enlightenment. I've learned so much listening to your shows. I'm so glad it comes right after my show, The Filmosophers, because I often catch it and I've been so inspired. You had Gangaji on once, and I remember she said, you said, what do you want to say at the end? She said, remember, they're just thoughts. That really hit me over and over again. So thank you, Monica. You were readily accessible to bring on Julia Desmond. Thank you, Julia, for being here. It's a wonderful thing. I'm so happy to be able to help bring this out. Save this easy. Thank you very much.
And thank you, Bruce, for setting this up for us. And you're welcome. Welcome on our show anytime. Now, normally when my mother's not here, she gives me a quote to read for our quote of the day at the end, and I forgot to get that from her. So I went on writersvoices.com, where we have a collection of some of her past quotes, and you'd never guess which one shows up. They rotate through, so you don't know which one's going to show up, and the one that showed up is so fitting. If you want others to be happy, practice compassion. If you want to be happy, practice compassion. See you next week on Writers' Voices. And stay tuned for Planet Earthwild with James Moore. Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM, produced by Monica Hadley and James Moore. Archives available on KRUUFM.com and writersvoices.com.